Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name is Josh, and I'm a fellow entrepreneur traveling around Orlando to bring you guys stories from the greatest entrepreneurs, founders, and those who support the community, like investors and supporters. So on today's show, we're going to have a conversation with a local entrepreneur. His name is Brian Hall. He is the founder and CEO of a company called Kona Docs in Orlando, Florida. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
I'm Brian Hall. I'm Brenda is my wife. I got five kids. They're all grown kids now, 22 to 31. Got three grandkids, and my favorite title is pawpaw right now. Best job title I've ever had is being a pawpaw. But I am passionate about being an entrepreneur, being a business owner, and I always got some crazy ideas, drive my wife crazy all the time. So that's Brian Hall, nutshell. I'm a former U.S. Air Force pilot for 12 years, and I still have a real passion for flying also, and that's my hobby.
Yeah, nice. All right, so pawpaw, we won't call you that. We'll call you Brian on the show, but, you know, that's interesting. The first thing that you mentioned when I said, you know, who are you and what you do, you mentioned your family. You mentioned those who are surrounded around you, your kids and your grandkids. What is the importance of that as you build your business and your life? Why did you start with that?
It's everything I do. I mean, everything I do, number one is to take care of my family, feed my family, try to take care of them. And if I can do it and have fun, make some money at the same time, and then also enrich their lives, not by putting money in their pocket, but giving some real good life lessons, real active in our church, and if we can help our church along and fund the gospel, that's even better. And I think that's the only two reasons a guy ought to be in business, is take care of his family and help other people.
Well, that sounds awesome. So that seems to give you a lot of purpose to what you're working towards. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you are funding your family and five kids and grandkids, all you know, your growing family. How do you do that in today's world with Kona Docs?
It's funny. We got my mind thinks about business all the time. My wife's always trying to pull the reins back and say, Brian, you know, you think about something else and don't give me another idea or whatever. Think about it. But as far as like with Kona Docs, it's been an evolution. We've been in the dock business and the marine business since 2001 with our first business in Mobile, Alabama. And we were very successful with that business. We were Inc. 500 company 3 years in a row. Grew it to about $12.5 million in sales, and got caught up in the 2009-2010 bust. I've kind of figured out, I've been through two business cycles. The pool guys and the dock guys, we're the first two guys to get kicked to the curb, but we're the first ones to get rich after the market comes back. And the market's definitely coming back right now. This economy that we're seeing has been awesome. Past probably 2 years have been really tough until about 10 months ago. We're really seeing the phones are just ringing off the hook. And so we're trying to figure out how to scale. And that's probably our biggest problem now that we have, is trying to figure out how to scale the business. And we've built docks in Dripping Springs, Texas. We've delivered docks out there, Islip, New York. We got a customer, a hotel that we're going to be building a dock for in Costa Rica, in Golfito. We've got, and then we got a new customer. I was just in Panama last week. We're going to be doing a large marina in Panama City. So the product we have, it's portable. It goes around, and just trying to figure out how to scale it is the biggest challenge.
Okay. So your dock company for boats, jet skis, patio chairs, like anybody who lives on the water or has something near the water, you have a dock. Now, what's different from Kona Docs versus a traditional dock that most people see? Like what makes your product innovative? What makes it different than just a regular dock that we have seen.
Well, the we call them stick docks, where you take sticks and put them in the ground, or pilings is the more proper way to say it. Where you take, like here in Orlando, everybody uses 6x6 pilings, 95% of the docks. And we've done that. We've been a dock company for a long time where we built docks using 6x6 pilings. But we've seen with the two hurricanes we just had, and the flood waters up and down, either your dock's too high of the water and you got to get a ladder down to your boat, and you feel like you're about to break your neck trying to get down to your boat, or your dock's underwater. And here in Johns Lake, where our office is, I'd say probably a third of the docks are underwater right now, just because we're the water's just really high. So we started about 2 years ago building floating docks, mainly because it was a fast way to build a dock to recover from the hurricane. And everybody was calling us all at the same time. They wanted their dock fixed the next week, and we've only got three crews, so we couldn't build them fast enough. But we can build floating docks fast enough. And basically with a floating dock, you just add water. And then we started getting really elaborate with our floating docks. We've done nice aluminum roofs on the docks. We've done, now we got floats. And now there's no reason you should build a stick dock. We've got everything a stick dock has. We can put it in a floating dock, and we can build it in 3 weeks. And here's the kicker about our docks, is the funniest thing is it takes about anywhere between 3 months to 6 months to pull a permit on a regular fixed dock or stick dock. With our docks, we actually, a year ago, we listed ourselves with the U.S. Coast Guard Registry as a boat builder. So our docks are considered vessels. We actually put a plaque on the dock, and Josh, I know you get, we're on audio here, but here's the plaque. It says it's good for up to eight to 10 persons, depending on the size of the dock, and you can put a 5-horsepower motor on our dock. There's not another dock here, and nobody's going to put a 5-horsepower motor on the dock, but we actually put 5-horsepower motors on our docks to deliver them to our customers. Sometimes we have a removable transom. And so you go to DMV, we have a vessel identification number our hull number on the dock. And for $35 in Orange County, you can register your dock as a vessel, and you don't have to go and get a permit for it. And it's been challenged a couple of times. And basically we just told the construction offices, hey, they need to talk to the Florida Department of Transportation, because they called it a boat and not a dock. And that's how we get around getting the permit process.
Nice. And you're not digging anything. You're not interrupting the wetlands, or you're not actually putting these posts in the ground. It just floats on top of the water.
It floats on top of the water. It's great. So if you move, you can take your dock with you. If you want to sell it to your neighbor, it's two pins and two cotter pins. You pull and you can move your dock. And if you really want to take your dock out on the lake and you want to put a motor on the back of it, you can take your dock for a spin.
Yeah.
And you got to put the numbers that the DMV gives you. Put the numbers with a good certificate on the front of your dock, and you can take your dock boat for a spin. It's just kind of unique.
Now, how did you get from flying planes, right, and serving our country in the service, to building docks, to building floating docks? Like, what was that transition there?
All right, so it's really funny. So I was in the Air Force, active duty until 1994. I flew with the Hurricane Hunters. I used to fly into hurricanes for 3 years. That's a tell another story. One of the best jobs I ever had flying.
Most people are running away from hurricanes. You fly into them.
I fly into hurricanes, and that was a blast. The Hurricane Hunter guys, if they would take me right now and I could fit in the flight suit, I'd sign up in a heartbeat. And then I got out, and I was a reservist until 2001, but I had a payroll service. I started a payroll service, and we had fun taking clients from ADP, the big payroll company. They were doing a really lousy service back then. They're really good now because I'm a reseller for ADP. But they're really good. But we were taking clients from them. And then, actually, when I would fly with the reserves, I'd have to run payroll checks. And I had a big computer. I had my computer and a printer on a hand pallet. And I would move it around inside the C-130. And actually, one time I was in Hawaii, and I had to run payroll in Hawaii. Me and my wife were running the company. And I was FedExing payroll checks to go back for my clients. But I'd fly, and then at night I'd do payroll, put it back in the FedEx envelopes, and then go fly more. And that was early, early days. And then I sold that company back to ADP. That was my first company I started.
So you took customers from them. ADP. And then you sold the company back to them.
And it's a top secret thing how I got the ADP clients. And it's the funniest story. And I'm not going to tell you on
because
a podcast.
It's being recorded, right? Awesome. Well, that's so awesome that, you know, you built a little niche from an existing company. You found a way that they were not serving their customers. You found that niche. You filled that need. And then you sold that need essentially back to the company. Like, what advice do you have for others out there? Because a lot of entrepreneurs are going, I need an original idea. I need to get something off the ground from scratch. I need a bunch of capital. Like, you took something that was already moving, a C-130, a big, you know, airplane, but ADP already created the wheel, right? So how did you find that little need to fill it? Like, talk to us about that.
Okay, so, and one of my clients was a boat builder. He built boats. And so I went in partners with him, and he's like, really, Brian, I already went with ADP. I don't want to go back with ADP. I said, go with ADP for 6 months so I can get my payoff, and then come back and I'll help you start a business, and we'll work on this boat building business. So we had a boat building business called Kona Cat, and you can actually, we built probably about 20 boats in Fort Lauderdale, and probably about 15 of the boats that are in Nassau, their double deck boats for Mystic Tours, are some of our old remnants of the boats we got out there for the old Kona Cat boats. We built the first Kona Cat air conditioned double deck boat, 70 foot long, 250 passenger, called the Perseverance. It's still out there.
Wow.
And in fact, it's the number one wedding boat that Atlantis uses in the Bahamas. But so I got involved in that, and I kind of saw how things work, and I love the business side of things. And then from there, I bought another client that had a dog business, and I love the dog business, and that's how I learned the dog business from him on the business side. And then, but I'm one of the guys that go out and if we build a stick dock, somebody really wants a stick dock bad enough, I'll help them put the pilings in the ground and that kind of thing.
So you really, you found other people that were doing something well, you found an expertise, and then you partnered with them, and you pumped your knowledge and capital into that and helped them grow it. So you didn't just go, I'm going to go start something from scratch. You kind of built on top of ADP's, their payroll, and you built a business within that, sold it to them. Found a boat builder, partnered with them, built that, and now it's a number one wedding boat, and then docking. So you've kind of evolved into growing with other people and with other people's expertise. Like, out of all the things that you bring to the table, what do you think is your number one, like, superpower that you add to these businesses, from ADP to boat building to docks? What is your superpower?
Probably the only superpower I got is speed of execution. I'm in a group, and then Kona Docks, we've actually been an Inc. 500 company twice. So I've had five Inc. 500 companies that's been listed in. Well, I take it back. I've had one Inc. 500 company and four Inc. 5000 companies, but we're in the Inc. magazine. And execution, if somebody gives me a great idea, I think about it. I kind of write down a couple of things in the business. I go save the domain. I may go incorporate the company. I've got probably about 70 companies I've incorporated. And then I kind of play with it, and just me by myself, see how I can make it work. And if it looks like it's viable, then I'll launch the business. And then, like Tuesday night, you're going to laugh. Can I tell you?
No, all that's
right.
It
has nothing to do with Kona Docks. But right. I'm a pilot. I've got two planes.
Yeah.
And so my neighbor in Kissimmee, he has a hangar right beside me. He's about 70-year-old guy, nicest guy in the world. But his plane's not that nice, but he's got a little Piper Warrior or something. And he takes people for flights for around Disney to watch the fireworks. He charged them $350 to go watch fireworks. So I'm like, that's amazing that you can do that. And he's like, Brian, I only do it like two nights a week, and I don't want to do it much more. He said, I'll send you all the leads you want. And so I said, that'd be kind of fun. So tomorrow night, I got my first couple that I'm flying. It's her birthday. The guy wants to pay me $350 to go fly my airplane. 35-minute flight. We take off from Kissimmee. I practiced the other night. I got the soundtrack to Disney's, to the and they live happily ever after, whatever their little thing is.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna play the I'm gonna play through my Bluetooth through the speaker in the plane, their headset. They can hear it. They can look down and he's right. It's probably a 27-minute fireworks show, and 3 minutes getting out there and 3 minutes getting back. Yeah. But so I'm gonna play with that, and I've got enough friends that have like their instructors are good pilots that I can trust. So if I get this going, my airplanes are just sitting too idle. I want to get them flying and make a little bit of money.
Yeah.
So I may just spin off a little business here, you know.
I like it. I like it. So you've got about 70 companies that you've kind of started, played with. Like when you think of an idea or you hear an idea, you said you write some things down on a piece of paper. You go buy the domain. You maybe register it with Sunbiz or whatever. What are some of the questions you ask yourself as to whether I'm going to invest a little bit of money? It might be a $15 domain or, you know, $125 on Sunbiz. But what questions do you ask yourself before you take the next step and open up your wallet? From idea to wallet, what are some questions you ask yourself?
It's the biggest thing is ROI. I mean, if I'm going to invest my time or money, what kind of return am I going to get?
Yeah.
And I love businesses. ConoDox is not the business for low inventory, but I love no inventory businesses that produce a great, that have a great upside. But then the bad thing about the flying around and showing people fireworks, everybody with an airplane can go do it. You know, the barriers to entry is not there. With ConoDox, there's a huge barrier to entry. We have a pizza restaurant also in Jacksonville I didn't tell you about.
Oh, yeah.
So
which one?
It's called Baby Bella's Pizza.
Okay.
I used to have three Marco's pizza restaurants. We sold those. And so we started another one. And Isabel is my granddaughter. And she's 4 years old. And we actually made her the CEO of the company when she was 17 months old.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And we had T-shirts made up. Like my boss wears diapers. and we have her on the poster. And she does videos. She does YouTube videos for us now. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, she was... Her teacher told my daughter, they live up in Baltimore, she says, Isabel was saying something funny about her pizza restaurant. She makes her pizzas here and at her restaurant. And is it make-believe or what is it, Michelle? And she said, no, her crazy grandfather gave her a pizza restaurant.
That's awesome.
and we give the teacher, like, Baby Bella T-shirts for Christmas and stuff. So.
And so she gets good grades too.
Yeah. And that's her college program, but she's in private school and we use the money there to fund her private school. And so that's, it's kind of a cool thing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So when you write down things, you're thinking ROI, return on investment. So not only money, like if I put in a dollar, will it spit a dollar back, but also time. If I invest some time, will I get a return for my time? So like, how do you go about knowing if it's a good idea or not? Because speed of execution, once you know it's a good idea, you're going to execute and you're going to run with it, right? Nobody could beat you on that. That's your superpower, right? You're like Flash. But like, what other questions do you ask yourself and write down before you spend money on it? Because you could go down a rabbit hole and waste a lot of money.
I've gone down the rabbit hole way too many times and I wasted a lot of money.
Yeah.
I've had more crash burns than I have hits, that's for sure.
All right.
I bought an airline out of bankruptcy one time.
Okay.
And me and two other Air Force pilots, we ran it for, I spent $300,000 in 90 days.
Yikes.
And pulled the ripcord and jumped out of that one, man. That was the worst idea we've ever had. Call me if you ever want to hear the whole story. Don't buy an airline in the U.S. or a Part 135. It's really hard.
Yeah.
And we thought it could be easy and we thought it would be romantic, you know, to have this great little airline flying the Bahamas, but no, it's terrible.
It's expensive.
It's a bad idea.
So what other questions do you ask yourself when you write down these things? Or maybe,
so what am I going to get out? I mean, when am I going to pull the ripcord? I mean, okay. Am I going to be in this thing for another 2 months and just bleeding like crazy?
Yeah.
Or am I? And is there a thing? And I tell you, ConoDox, when we first started doing the pontoon docks, 2 years ago, it was education here in town. And everybody's like, no, we want fixed docks. We want fixed docks. And we didn't have many docks out there to show them. And a bunch of people said, Brian, you need to pull the ripcord on that and get out of it. But it's funny now. We just did two episodes for Zombie House Flippers on A&E Channel, and we're really getting a lot of footing now, and it's really getting fun. And other dock builders I've got about five friends that are dock builders in other towns, non-competing dock builders, and they actually want to buy our pontoons and build their docks on top of our pontoons. So it's really getting exciting what we got going on now.
Yeah. So when you're thinking of an idea and you're going down the route, you actually have a stop loss in there. At this point, at this dollar amount, I'm pulling the ripcord. So that way it doesn't become emotional.
Yep.
Okay. So you said you had a few crash and burns. And hearing this from a pilot, you know, this is, I like the language you use. Pull the ripcord, you know, yank that parachute out, crash and burns, right? What are, maybe give us an idea of another crash and burn you had. Airline was one of them.
Okay.
Give us an
idea.
All right, so
this is really cool. It's still a great idea. It's on the shelf.
Yeah.
If any investors listen out there and they've got a lot of money and they want to throw at it, I could pull it off the shelf when we get it, but it's a company called Cuba Cat.
Okay.
C-U-B-A-K-A-T. This was about 3 years ago when I was running Kona Docks here, and I'm 60% owner of this company, but we had Obama in 2013 opened up Cuba and said people could fly down there. So I called the next day, I called Customs, said, hey, this weekend I want to fly to Cuba. I go to the Bahamas all the time, I'm playing, I want to go to Cuba. They're like, no, Brian, you can't go to Cuba. We don't have our forms, we don't know how to in-process you. I said, well, can you find me? Can you put me in jail? Can you take my plane away from me? Is there anything you can do to me negative? And they're like, no, there's nothing we can do to you. And I said, well, I really want to go. Y'all need to figure this out. So I waited till after the first of the year. That was like the 10th of December 2013. January 2014, like January 2nd, I called the same guy back up, the head guy in Key West, said, hey, I'm ready to go. Y'all got all your stuff together. You know, I'm a former government guy. I know they're slow about getting processed and stuff like that. He's like, no, Brian, I'm telling you, you cannot go. And I'm like, are you going to do anything to me? He's like, nope, can't do anything to you. I said, okay, I'm going. I'll see you on Saturday. He goes, you better not. I said, I'm going. And so I took a WINK ABC news team out of Fort Myers with me. I'm friends with Matt Doherty and Alex Shrek, the camera guy. And so the three of us, and they're going to do live remotes from Cuba, from Havana for like 3 or 4 days. I held the light and I was a camera guy for a little bit for them. But we landed the first private airplane in Cuba in 55 years. And it was kind of a publicity stunt for Cuba Cat.
Yeah.
So they pumped me for Cuba Cat, Cuba Cat, Cuba Cat, Cuba Cat, about starting a ferry service between Miami and Havana.
Yeah.
And that was our business plan, is Cuba Cat is the ferry service. And so we got a little bit of funding from some friends and family. I sold some equity in the company. I got some of my best friends are still part of the company, but it's sitting on the shelf. We got our license from the U.S. About 6 months later that we could operate a ferry. We found a $20 million ferry boat in Greece that we were getting a lease on. And we were going to lease that ferry boat. And Cuba said, no cars, just people. That's all they want. So we said, and they kind of want just like a day cruise, go down there for the day and come back. And it's a 3 hour trip, so that's kind of hard to go down for a day. We're gonna run on a marathon, and they wanted us to go out of Miami. And that was gonna be now 5 or 6 hour trip, so we're gonna do like an overnight. We tried everything we could. We spent probably about $150,000 on this whole thing, Cuba Cat. I've been in the Minister of Tourism's house, had dinner with him. His name's Eduardo, just the super nicest guy in the world. He actually came to Miami as my guest. Never been to the United States. One of my employees took him to Publix. I said, hey, take him to Publix, get him some water and some fruit for his room or whatever. Just kind of show him around. I'm running late. And he thought that was a museum of produce.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is a museum of produce. I said, no, there's Publix on every corner and their produce aisle looks all the same. It's really pretty produce, but it's nothing. It's not a museum. And I really developed a great relationship with him and also the Minister of Transportation, but he didn't speak English, but through translators. And but I never could get them to say yes. I mean, we would be operating today if the Cuban government said yes. And the biggest thing is there's no place for people to sleep. The cruise ships are great because they go down there, people can sleep on the cruise ships. But I've been interviewed Fox News a couple times, CNN, BBC. After that trip, it was just like my phone was just ringing, and we were taking every publicity call we could just to publicize Cuba Cat.
Yeah.
And it's still there. I think it's definitely needed, but my license is still good for another year. for CubaCat, but we still don't have the permission from the Cuban government. But after spending $100,000, using my wife is my biggest, what is it, red, green, yellow?
Yeah, you know, stoplight?
Yeah, my stoplight. She's really good at throwing the red light on and not hurt my feelings or anything like that, but she's like, Brian, you're bleeding really bad. And anytime I go against Brenda, 99.9% of the time, it's a mistake with a lot of zeros behind it. Yeah. So I listen to my wife most of the times. I know you're going to be listening to this, honey, but sometimes she has to tell me 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
And then I finally listen and I stop. And so we had to pull the ripcord on CubaCat. And I've got a lot of time and a lot of sweat, blood, sweat, and tears in that thing. And we really thought we were going to be operating out of Miami and out of Cuba.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But one day it could still happen, man.
You and I might be having a Mai Tai or a Cuban cigar.
I hope so, man.
Yeah. All right. So Kona Docks, I'm sitting here. We're actually on the lake in Winter Garden, right?
Yeah, Winter Garden.
We're here on the lake. What's this lake called?
John's Lake.
John's Lake. And you took me for a tour around the facility, and you guys are really innovating the dock industry. You went from stick docks, which are permanent structures, to floating docks, which you don't need to pull permits. You could actually put a motor on if you want. When you move and buy and sell your house, you could actually move the dock with you. It doesn't sink, right? So you could always, and then you could add structures on it. So that was kind of like Kona Docks 1.0. But you said you were showing me some new products that you guys actually have, what you call Kona Docks 2.0.
Yep.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the evolution of floating docks?
Okay, so what we're doing now is we're taking high-density polyethylene water pipe. It's black water pipe. You see it every day on the side of the road when they're laying a new highway or new road. It's drinking water pipes. These pipes have a warranty of 100 years. They're good for 100 years, buried down in the ground. They're HDPE is the same as like a paint bucket made from Lowe's or Home Depot, the orange buckets or the blue buckets.
Yeah.
That's high density polyethylene plastic. So, and we use virgin HDPE to build our pontoons. And then we cap the ends of the water pipes. This 18 inch water pipe we cap, and then we do a plastic weld, then we put a bracket on the water pipe. And there's a couple of different companies that have done it, and we kind of seeing what they do, we kind of changed it up a little bit, but we think ours is probably the best way to do it. And then, but now 2.0, we've gone another step further. And this is where I've got a rotationally molded pontoon that we're making in China. And this rotationally molded 8-foot pontoon already has the caps incorporated in it, already has the brackets molded on the pipe itself. So all we do is take it out of the back of the truck and we start building our docks on it right away. And we can put our stringers on it, we can put our rim boards on it, put the decking on it. And so in a really fast build time, we can build it. We don't know yet if we're going to put it on, we put the pontoons on Amazon, where do-it-yourselfers can sell it. We could probably put them in Lowe's and Home Depot, where guys can actually build their own floating docks using our system and hand them the plans. I love Elon Musk. I actually met him in 2010. That's another story, a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I love where he gave the Hyperloop plans. He made them public. I don't know if you knew that. And he made the Hyper plans public. And if you look at like CrossFit, you know, CrossFit has the basic CrossFit games, the plan. Here's what CrossFit is. But then every gym, CrossFit gym out there, has a totally different flavor of CrossFit gym. And so we're in that stage right now. Do we throw the pontoons out there for everybody to take it, or do we keep it ourselves and build just the Kona Docks pontoon? And we're trying to figure out what the best way to take that Kona Docks 2.0. But I'm telling you, I've never been this excited about a physical product that you touch as these pontoons we have. It's going to change everything. One of our friends, Rick with Wave Armor, they make our jet ski docks for us. They've got a Evo Sport boat lift, drive-on boat lift. And I'm telling you, I saw it at Miami Boat Show. It's going to change everything. Right now, everybody has a cable lift system, yeah, mechanical lift, or have a lift that pushes from the bottom. But a price point of about $5,000, you can drive on into a lift. Your boat's high and dry of the water. There's nothing mechanical. It's going to revolutionize the boat lift, and we can actually plug and play that into our Conodoc 2.0 doc. So I think just over the next, and here's the cool thing about the doc business too, Josh, is there's no FedEx of doc business out there. There's no industry leader out there. It's all mom and pops pretty much. There's maybe one or two big companies that build marinas, but nobody that builds residential docks. It's a name known all over. And believe it or not, Austin, Texas is the second largest market besides Orlando for docks, or for Florida. The Austin market's huge. And for them to be able to put these docks in pontoons and give them to dock builders so they can build on top of them, it's going to be really cool. Yeah. I'm excited about it. I don't know if you can tell.
We can tell. So, Brian, why Orlando? You told me about Cuba. You were in Hawaii. You told me about there was another Jacksonville. You have a business there. Like, why are you building Kona Docks here in Orlando?
So we lived in Mobile, Alabama for the past 25 years until 3 years ago, and we moved here. We moved here, another crazy business I don't even want to get into, but it's in India, China, Vietnam. I have another business there. But how we ended up financing the three pizza restaurants that brought us to Florida. But Brennan and I, we said as soon as the kids get out of school, we don't want to live in Mobile, Alabama anymore. We want to move to Florida. So as soon as our youngest daughter got out of high school, started college, we moved to Florida. And we always said we want to move south of Orlando. That was always a joke for the past 10 or 15 years. And we're a little bit north of Orlando. We didn't make it quite south of Orlando, but it's the best thing we did. We love it here. But I'm so sorry. What was the question?
Why Orlando? So
why Orlando? Okay. The heat. And I tell you, I love the airport. I love the people here. I love that Miami. You take a house here and stick it in Miami, and it's three times the price in Miami. Still, my house in Alabama doesn't compare to the I wish I could bring my Alabama house here.
Yeah.
It was a great place to raise a family, some of that. But the cost of living is really good. And we're foodies, too. We love Disney. And we actually love – I mean, we just walked around Epcot yesterday and just had the best time, just me and my wife. But it was so funny. When I turned 50 – I'm 53 now. But when I turned 50, I said, all right, this is a birthday present to myself. I've been in the Air Force. I had to wear a uniform. I've always had to tuck my shirt in and everything. I says – I turned 50, I'm wearing shorts every day for my 50th birthday. And I did. Yeah. Except for 2 days I had a wedding and a funeral I went to. Out of respect. And I wore pants on both of those days. But when I turned 51, I said, I like that so much, I'm gonna do it for another 49 years.
Nice.
So Orlando gives me the opportunity to wear shorts every day.
Ladies and gentlemen, he is wearing some shorts right now. I get to see his nice hairy legs right here in his office. But that was a part of your dream. You wore a uniform for so long. Now you get to choose being your own boss. What advice do you have for entrepreneurs out there who are similar to you? They have tons of ideas. They're full out executioners. They've got that speed of execution skill and they've got all these ideas. Like, what advice do you have for them?
There's a book, Seth Godin. I don't know if you read Seth Godin. You're smiling.
Yeah.
I love Poke the Box.
Yeah.
And he talks about rapid prototyping.
Yep.
And I love that. And I love creating a website and I love playing with Google AdWords. And then all of a sudden the phone starts ringing. I don't know. That I get the biggest high. I may not make any money, but I feel cool that, hey, I just made that phone ring.
Someone wanted something.
Yeah, somebody wanted something. And I love throwing something on eBay and seeing people bid for it. I just like to see that, you know, and to kind of tinker with that. And so rapid prototyping for the young entrepreneur, don't be afraid. And even if your product's not perfect, it's going to get better and better. Our Kona docks have gotten better and better. I showed you, we out of the past 2.5 years, we've had one failure of a pontoon, but I know now what to do, how to position the pontoon where it's not going to fail. We had a bracket that got cracked on a pontoon, but we, knock on wood, most of our docks have gone through the hurricanes and not a scratch on them. They're doing fine. We got one big Kona docks dock that we built. We put four pontoons on it. And we drive excavators and bobcats on it, and we just abuse it like crazy, and it's still doing really well. So, but don't be afraid to do rapid prototyping, even if the product's not perfect yet. And then if you're like me, I kind of saw this later in my life, I can only grow a business to about 7 to 10 million, and I couldn't really take it further than that. And where I'm a really good executioner, I'm really good at pulling the trigger and making things happen, ready, fire. I have to learn how to aim a little bit sometimes. But I need a really good person to manage the business behind me. And my team I've got now, I got Camille, Mick, and Jose. And those three guys I've got, my sales manager, my office manager, and my operations manager, they are very detail-oriented. They're really good. I love their drive and their enthusiasm. And it's awesome to be on a team like that where I can be the vision. I talked to Camille last week about being the president of the company, and I've never had somebody that I've actually turned the company over to. And Camille, and I committed to Camille last week. I said, Camille, I want you to be, in the next 6 months, I want you to be president of this company, and I want you to run this company. And Camille would drive all the way across town to go use Sam's gas to save 15. He's always squeezing, and I need that because I'm a bad spender sometimes, but Camille's always like, hey, I found this cheaper at Lowe's, or I found this cheaper at here, or whatever. And I need that person that's like that, and it's a good manager, and he manages the crew well, and really takes care of the crews that we got. And I'm just now, it's sad, I'm 53 years old, and I'm just now figuring out I need a Camille, or I need a Wozniak or somebody like that to really come in behind me to make sure I'm good with the vision, I'm good with the execution, but I need somebody to run the ball and play, make the plan happen.
That's good. Where could people go to find out more about you or your business?
Konerdocs.com, about me, LinkedIn, I guess. It's got all my crazy businesses on there.
Yeah.
And I'm not afraid to say times I've failed really hard. Guys, I've, 2000, I had some serious IRS tax problems that I don't like to talk about. But if you got some serious tax problems, call me. It's not the end of the world. God's got a purpose and a plan for you, and it's easy to reboot and make that money back and pay back the IRS, or wait till the statute of limitations run out. I don't know. But anyway, and I really thought after those tax problems, I thought it was over for my life as far as a business guy. I was just going to go get an airline job, but I couldn't get an airline job at Delta or here in the United States. I had to go get it. If I was going to do it, I had to do it overseas so that the IRS wouldn't take my money. But we were able to overcome that and start a business and get it going again.
Nice. All right, guys. Well, Ryan, thanks for sharing so openly your passion. And I really like what you said about, you know, your superpower about speed of execution, of running towards things. And just all the stories you shared about partnering with people and taking them to that $7 to $10 million mark. And then, you know, figuring out how to pass it on to maybe someone else. So I really enjoyed your story. And what we'll do is we'll include your LinkedIn and some of your links in the show notes below. So if anybody would like to chat with you about their docs, if someone wants a doc, or about IRS problems or something, or just need someone good to talk to, man, we'll put that in there for you. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening into the show. We hope you've enjoyed it. I encourage you to reach out to Brian and tell him you heard him on the show here and ask some questions and maybe help him figure out how to get Kona Cat off the shelf and into the water. So until then, we'll talk with you all on the next episode. See you later, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.